Welcome to The Rink, a hockey podcast by hockey bloggers for hockey fans. I'm James Tapeleg Grayley, and along with Tom Luongo, this week we're talking about the worst contracts in the NHL. Two Red Wings get suspended for not showing up to the All-Star game, and my new favorite goalie makes a very unconventional save. That, and I'm talking to Steve Laporte from Puck the Media. We're talking about the AHL All-Star game coverage on Versus and the possibility of the return of the glow puck. That's all coming up on The Rink. The biggest story over the weekend was the only story over the weekend for the NHL, which was, of course, the All-Star game. Critics hate it. Players seem not to care about it, and the kids love it. So, I saw it in what I think is probably the absolute best way of seeing it, which is 1 hour each night, NHL Network replays, and that's it. I don't care about the game, so at least I could just catch the highlights and the fun.
I was going to say the best way to watch that game was with a large glass of whiskey, a gun and two bullets. I'm not really sure. It's the All-Star game. Like we were talking about last week, it's one of those things. It's a rite of passage as a hockey fan when you finally realize that the All-Star game is just not worth any serious hockey fan's attention, I guess, at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think you're right. The funny thing for it is that we're looking at what people like to call the best showcase of the game. It's a showcase of the game. It's time to celebrate the game. And that only just tells me that the regular season is too long. That if you can't take 82 games and make that the showcase,
right?
All just staggering slowly towards the playoffs, and now this is the unofficial halfway mark, then maybe that tells them that our season's just way too damn long.
And that's one way of looking at it. And it's a perfectly good one, I think. But the other way of looking at it is if it's the big showcase for the game, then it should mean something, and the players should take it that way. Mm-hmm. The simple fact of the matter is that they don't play hockey during the All-Star game. Right. Actually, the skills competition is a better showcase for what these players are capable of doing than the All-Star game is. I mean, it just is, But, I mean, we actually had a penalty call this year, and amazingly that Mike Komisarek can get called for a penalty during the All-Star game, but never during the regular season.
Oh, yeah. That's,
I mean,
and
you
that's
know,
the Tom I love not, and if, love.
If that's not like the Webster's definition of irony, I really don't know what is.
No, you're right. It was the first penalty since 2000. Sandy Sojalich got called for a penalty. It was also kind of fun that the Young Stars game, somebody threw a body check out there, an All-Star game body check, which, is essentially kind of like me stubbing my toe. It's not that big a deal.
The check, that takes me back to when Roenick threw that big check. I think it was on Kachuk a few years ago.
Yeah.
And apparently he got, he took bets on the bench as to whether or not he would actually do it. And of course he admitted it, 10 minutes after he did it, he's like, I got paid for that.
Pretty much smiling. I think Chuck looked back behind him like, what the heck was that? But he was still smiling.
Oh, of course he was. And JR was just eating it up. And at that level, that's like, Jeremy Roenick at his finest. You talk about showcasing, the game and, the character that he was at the best point of his career. Mm-hmm. Certainly that was great. And, what we have now is still great. We have Alexander Ovechkin going out with the sunglasses and the cowboy hat and just having a good old time, which is also, great to see. We finally have somebody with some personality.
It's one of the things I love Alexander Ovechkin. I mean, to me, I would prefer him be the poster boy of the NHL than Sidney Crosby, but that's just personal preference. What I hate about it all is that, everybody was saying how Alexander Ovechkin is great for the game. He's great for the game. He's great for the game, which is great. It's wonderful. That's excellent. Right. But what I hate is that we have to single one guy out, that we don't have enough guys that are great for the game. Here's Alex Ovechkin. He does he's great on the ice. He's fun. He's a fun personality. He's fun for the team. And then you look at, let's say, the Carolina Hurricanes. Let's look at the Atlanta Thrashers. Where are any guys on those teams, or the vast majority of the teams, that are great for the game in the same way Alex Ovechkin is? Maybe not in the skill department necessarily, but also the personality department.
There's very few, and it's been talked about for years. And a lot of it is just that a lot of a great number of hockey players are just really not simple, but just really down to earth. Kind of, I don't say boring, but just kind of, you know, they're just. It's the culture of the sport to be, you know, to not really play up them individually themselves, and to be that kind of over the top personality. And it's just this. It's a lot of the culture of the game, and it's very Canadian,
right,
in that respect.
No, and I understand that they're, you know,
like, I mean that in the best way, and obviously I mean that in the best way. I mean, it's a slight against Canadians or anything. Obviously, you know, it's the motherland; it's the home of hockey, so it's the motherland.
No, I think it's more the system that they grow up in rather than the fact that they are kind of raised by hockey and they're raised in the team and they're raised in a system and things like that. I think that even that spans, you know, beyond just Canadian hockey and Canadian juniors and things like that. You know, anytime that you kind of concentrate and focus your stuff on one end, you know, you're just going to kind of lose the rest. They're not going to understand Tom Luongo, you know, email signatures at the end of the, you know, like your right. sign off at the end of your signature, because, hey, guess what? They haven't been, you know, prompted that direction. It's just not
right.
You know, I can understand,
and you look at it, you still have the same culture that you always had. That the everybody wears a suit to the game, and the coaches wear a suit behind the bench, and there's a formality to the process, to this ridiculously violent and macho game. But they still try to put the gentlemanly veneer over the top of, you know, what is at times an incredibly violent indoor. You know, down and dirty kind of game, and one that has to be played at that level. But then, you know, they're all wearing suits and ties at the end of it.
Yeah, that's true.
It's a very strange, you know, dichotomy in that respect, and how hockey culture is. But, you know, and then you have a freewheeling guy like Ovechkin, and, you know, he just kind of throws the monkey wrench into the works, especially, you know, being all that, you know, that dangerous Russian and all that stuff.
The only other guy that I can think of off the top of my head right now, you know, a current NHL that throws that monkey wrench every so often, and he's toned it down quite a bit, has been Jeremy Roenick. I mean, of course there was the negative side of Sean Avery, you know, and that kind of monkey wrench, you know, but in the I'm being a hockey player, I'm purely doing this, and I'm, you know, and being entertaining at the same time, Jeremy Roenick's kind of the only other guy who stepped up to that mantle.
Yeah, he loved that spotlight, and, you know, Ovechkin loves it as well. So, and that's fine. If they want to take that, you know, they should run with it. And, you know, and in a lot of ways, Sidney Crosby, and, you know, it's the obvious comparison at this point, but it's obvious in some ways that Crosby's willing to take that mantle on and willing to do what's right for the sport in the same many ways, the same way that Gretzky did. But he almost seems really uncomfortable with all of it, and even though he's willing to do it, I think, you know, if he doesn't, you know, if he's uncomfortable doing it, he shouldn't do it. Let, you know, the person or people who want to do that stuff, let them go. Let them market the game for the rest of us.
No, I agree. I agree. You're right. The only other thing really that came out of the All-Star game is the Lidstrom and Datsyuk situation. Both were to be part of the All-Star game. Were basically no-shows to the All-Star game, kind of known no-shows, citing injury problems, and the NHL basically suspended them for one game, their next game Tuesday night against the Columbus Blue Jackets, which has kind of turned into a bit more controversy than I would have ever expected it to.
I don't understand it. The guys have been ditching the All-Star game for years. I don't know why all of a sudden we have to single out Lidstrom and Datsyuk, other than the fact that, you know, maybe their injuries weren't all that big a deal or whatever. At the end of the day, it's, you know, it's not like these guys haven't done their job, especially Lidstrom over the years, of selling the sport and being available for the league to, you know, help market the league and whatnot. And if Nick Lidstrom, at this point in his career, doesn't want to show up to the All-Star game, hasn't he earned that right?
Yeah, you know, that's a good way of looking at it.
But certainly him.
Well, I think both of them are, you know, still are not. They're both players that the NHL looks up to, which makes their you know, if which makes their absence a little more pointed.
I guess.
And really, the rule didn't just get made this year. It was actually from last year with Marty Brodeur not showing at all. And the other end, the flip side for me is that Sidney Crosby, obviously voted in All Stars, blah blah blah, and he showed up. He came to the All Star game. He didn't play. He just did the media and stuff like that. Now my two biggest problems with all of this, or with what Lidstrom and Datsyuk not showing up, is number one that you have no representation from the reigning Stanley Cup champions, and that's unexcusable. I mean, somebody should have been there. Mike Babcock is not the Red Wings. That isn't what people want to see. They want to see Lidstrom. They want to see Datsyuk. There's a reason that they were All Stars. Just even showing up and doing a little bit of media would have taken care of this whole problem.
Sure.
The other problem that I have with them not showing up is that if they are so injured that they can't even show up and do media, they probably shouldn't be playing a real game anyways. You know, and that's
another way of looking.
Maybe that's a little short-sighted of me. You know, part of the problem that people are having, and especially Red Wings fans are having right now, is that because the Red Wings are so hard against the cap, they can only dress 17 skaters and two goalies tonight. Mind you, who put themselves against that cap? Who signed Hossa? Who made the deals?
Yeah, all of those things. Exactly. No, that's a self-inflicted wound and from a cap standpoint. And yes, I can say that if Lidstrom doesn't want to play in the All-Star game, doesn't want to take part in the skills competition or whatever. I mean, like I said, I think I can see him saying, look, I don't feel well enough to do this, and the NHL the Red Wings come first. Mm-hmm. That's fine, but yeah, like I said, you can craft the compromise position, which is to say, I'm going to show up,
right,
and do the media and sign some autographs
and be a good little soldier for the NHL,
and do that. And if you have to, wave from the stands or whatever in your suit and tie with your wife or whatever, and just do it. And from that perspective. That I can see.
It is kind of a self-inflicted wound in that the rule didn't come up this year. This was a carryover from last year. This is continuing. Board of Governors obviously agreed to it. All sorts of things, and the Red Wings had to know. If the Red Wings had just bought a plane ticket and said, "Hey, just go there, drink a few beers, relax, and we're going to play a game," it wouldn't be a big deal. It's funny because that's even kind of what how Scotty Bowman was looking at it. He was talking about it on I think it was 590 The Fan, and I found that from Kukla's Corner, which I'll put a link to it on our blog at www.rinkpodcast.com. And he discussed the situation, and I think that he was even kind of waffling a little bit as to was this deserved, was it not deserved. It's just kind of one of those situations where I think if they had, if they were injured long enough that they would have missed tonight's game anyways, it wouldn't have been a big deal.
Right.
Oh, and they're getting paid. They're not getting money deducted from them.
This was not a real suspension. It's just they're not allowed to dress.
Right.
Which is really odd. I mean, and if this was now imagine if this was it's one thing if it's the Red Wings. The Red Wings are going to make the playoffs, and they're almost likely going to win the division unless, something really out of the blue happens. Imagine if this was a bubble team.
Right.
Well, what if this was Jerome Iginla? Not Jerome Iginla. What if this was Roberto Luongo or somebody else, right? Somebody, a team on the bubble looking to make the playoffs. Now what?
Mm-hmm.
And they lose tonight. And they miss the playoffs by a point.
Yeah. And who are the Red Wings playing tonight? Blue Jackets. Big deal.
Right.
If they lost two points to the Blue Jackets, the Blue Jackets are not going to threaten their position.
No, not at all. If anything, this gives the Blue Jackets actually a bit of a leg up because they're a bubble team.
And God bless them because they could certainly use it.
Well, yeah, there's no argument there.
Yeah.
So.
I think it covers the basis of what the arguments are, but I just don't. I don't see the evil league doing things to the Red Wings in the same way. And maybe this is just me, not being a fan in the same way, but at the same time, I just don't see the league dissing on the Red Wings in the way that a lot of the fans of the Red Wings see.
Oh no, it's it. That's fans. That's just fans being fans. I mean, at the end of the day, this is no. It. Yeah. No.
Yeah.
Not when I watch the way the games were officiated. No. Sorry. The Red Wings. The Red Wings get there. They get every benefit of every doubt in every game.
Yeah.
Nine times out of ten. So.
Well, next time, hopefully the Red Wings will just buy a couple plane tickets. I'll tell you what, if they go if the same situation comes up next year and they decide not to go, I offer Lidstrom and Datsyuk, I will buy them a beer each, just to show up. That'll make it worth it, I'm sure.
I mean, unless the pizza business is really bad, that Mike Dillich can't afford a couple of a couple of plane tickets and a couple of hotel rooms for two of his guys. I mean,
I'm not going to say anything about their pizza.
it's the pizza business, and then in Detroit. Wow. Mm. So,
there was an interesting list put out on. The Edmonton Journal and Puck Daddy did some talking about it, which we of course will link to on our site, of some of the quote unquote scariest contracts out there in the NHL right now. Too long, too big, too much money for not enough output, and it's an interesting list.
It's a very interesting list, and I think it's not just the deal itself; it's the deal in the face of what could be, you know, a severe contraction of revenue over the course of the term of a lot of these contracts.
Right.
So, you know, when you look at some of the list, I saw the Wyshynski post this afternoon, and while prepping for the show, and then I went and looked at the actual list, and funny. To me, I of course wanted to see who he picked for the Sabres, and he picked the Pominville contract, which I have some interesting insights into as to why it would be if Pominville of all the people and not Vanek or Roy or whomever. Mm-hmm. But I find it interesting that three of the contracts are Briere, Drury, and Campbell.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, I'm looking at Briere and Wyshynski makes the point of Briere's because he's nearly redundant in Philadelphia. You've already got Carter and Richards. What do you still really need Briere for at the end of the day when you could have spent that money on on defenseman or another sniper or whomever? And then obviously the Drury contract is extremely scary. Again, you're paying guys in the beyond the prime of their careers. That's where I find them scary, the most scary. Mm-hmm. I look at Drury and I look at Briere and I look at a couple of the other guys. I look at Roman Hamrick's deal that he's got listed in Montreal. What was the other one? It was Calgary. It was Kiprusoff, who's already the goaltenders aren't as bad. They usually don't come into their prime until they're about 30.
Right.
But when you're looking at forwards and especially smaller forwards and defensemen, and you start looking at a long term deal for a guy who's over the age of 30, it's just not. It's just the actuarial tables in that are bad,
Well, now that you look at Briere right now, he's kind of proving his redundancy being out as long as he has.
Right.
And they're still doing fine. So.
And the Philadelphia Flyers are doing just fine. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Now,
the goalies are kind of interesting to me. I agree with the, Fleury. I've never been a huge fan of Fleury myself. I've always found him a little streaky, but that's just me. Obviously the DiPietro deal, nobody thought that was a good idea. Nobody thought that was ever,
Well, again, it's like everything else. At the $4.5 million cap hit over the course of the life of the contract is an excellent thing. It's a very very tradable contract as long as DiPietro's knees are going to be in any way, manner, shape, or form healthy while he's in the prime of his career. And this is the issue. He's 26 years old. As long as he can recover from this current, problem he's having this year. Honestly, the Isles, with one good season back under his belt where he's healthy, the Isles have a very tradable contract and could get, a lot of assets in return for him if they needed to.
Right.
I don't have as big a deal with – we were talking about it off air about the tradable dollars.
Right. I think that's the big key can you actually trade somebody under that money, even though the next buyer may be saddled a little longer than they may want to be. Tradable dollars, I think, is really what the key point is on these numbers.
Well, and the DiPietro contract, like the Briere contract and a few others, are all front-loaded.
Right.
So – and that becomes more and more tradable as time as the contract wears on, and as revenues are potentially, or revenues are shrinking, or at the very least staying flat, you know. Yeah, it makes, you know, that deal is still better than some of the other ones. I think the older the deals are, in the case of DiPietro, it's 2 or 3 years old now, and a couple others that he's referencing, those are better because they were written under a lower salary cap right. than the ones that were written this past October, or this past summer. So when you look at the Campbell deal, you know, you have to ask yourself, you know, and Chicago is already cap strapped as it is, and they're mm-hmm. going to be, and, you know, well, actually, no, I'm looking at it now, they're not really that bad off for next season, but, you know, $7.1 million for Brian Campbell. Now, he is in the prime of his career and everything else, but through, you know, 2016, wow.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, and also they're losing Hoppy Boolin, of course. He's going to go to the free agent market.
That is true.
And even if he doesn't go to the free agent market, there's no way in hell that he's going to sign back with Chicago for the same dollars he has now. It's definitely going to go down if he wants to stay.
Right. But, you know. Yeah, I think actually whenever you look at it, it's a team like Colorado, and you and I were, again, we were talking about this before we we went on the air, that the Ryan Smith deal, which is the one referenced in the Edmonton Journal article, is the one that's the scariest, because, you know, they still have $43 million or nearly $44 million committed for next year.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's a real issue at $6.2 million a cap hit for,
and that's when your goaltenders aren't even making that much money. You know what? Some of these, though, I mean, I'm looking at Ryan Smith, and I agree that it's one of the scariest on there. But the reason it's scary is because of the hindsight that we have now. Looking
right.
at, like, let's say J.S. Chiguer is on the list at $6 million until 2010-11.
Right.
Plain and simple, he won them a cup, and he was one game away from winning them a cup in 2003. You don't just let that hit the market for nothing. And I think that I think that's one of those hindsight ones that they're looking at. Ryan Smith was picked up. It was the Drury Gomez Briere year.
Right.
And
it was
the fourth
a big year.
Was Smith. He was the fourth big guy, quote unquote. And I think that there was a lot more hype and a lot more actually, you know what? Looking at this dollar figure that they have for him, I thought it was actually lower than that. But I thought it was like 5.25. But
he blew the water out. The interesting about it, but again, Smith is one of those guys. He's older than most everybody else here, and in that respect, he is really, it is a scary deal, mm-hmm. because, you know, when you're looking at the goaltenders again, 31, 32, 33, that's when goaltenders are really on the prime of their careers. You know, between 27 and 35 are their prime years. They go out longer than forwards, and certainly than forwards do, and certainly forwards who play the game like Ryan Smith do. Guys like Ryan Smith, you know, their game really trails off significantly after the age 31, 32, and they go from first line wingers to second line wingers to third line wingers really quickly, and it doesn't take very long. And that's, you know, and the question is, you know, are the Avalanche going to be willing to be interested in paying him that kind of money when he really is going to be a third line, you know, banger for all intents and purposes. And it's the same thing with at the end of the Briere deal. Now the Flyers, of course, really front loaded that deal. So in the last, I think, 3 years of that deal, he's only getting paid like $2.5 million. So he's definitely going to be in the perennial kind of Corey Stillman area. Every year he's traded off to somebody for a playoff run, because, you know, he can bring secondary scoring, and when Briere's 35, 36, and that deal's ending, that's the role he's going to be in,
and he's going to be less useful and more expensive than Jim Dowd, and that's kind of scary.
Well, I mean, in terms of a cap hit, but for a team that doesn't have, you know, for a team that doesn't have a huge cap hit, they're not going to have to pay him a lot of money. So in a revenue strap situation where you'll have more cap room than you have revenue, if you understand what I mean.
I think
is the argument I'm trying to make, that Briere will be tradable dollars, because it won't cost a lot of money to get him, but it'll cost a lot against the cap.
It'll be easy for
Philly just to buy him out at that point. Then it doesn't matter.
That's true, and they have the money. You know,
right, and Philly's got the money to just buy him out if they need to. Once he's in the year four on that deal, they could buy him out for practically nothing.
Right.
And it's not that bad. But
the one I'm looking
at
is really scary to me is Jason Spezza, actually, because I'm looking at – I mean, he's not that old, obviously. I mean, he's 25 years old. That's not he's not being put out to pasture by any means. But
right.
$7 million for unrealized potential. you know, and massively unrealized. The guy
Absolutely.
Is supposed to be, you know, he's supposed to be Danny Heatley. He's supposed to be the next, you know, he was supposed to be the next great, you know, star up there for them, and has always petered out. And we're looking at $7 million a year to hold on to the possibility.
Well, I don't know if you say that Spetz is really an unrealized thing. I think what he is hasn't become that complete player
right.
that you want, that you're paying him to be. At 25 years old, Spetz should be killing penalties and, you know, anchoring the power play and anchoring the top line and able to play and make anybody around him better, not just Danny Heatley and Daniel Alfredson. So right. the question you have about Jason Spezza is if he can, you know, he's not making, you know, anybody else around him other than top tier talent better. That has to call into question whether he really is top tier talent and that you're paying him as top tier talent, you know.
Well, that's pretty much what I'm talking about. He is being exactly. paid as to an, you know, to a place where he hasn't even close to realizing yet. I mean, $7 million.
Right.
He is not a $7 million player, and he's certainly not a $7 million player for this long.
Right. And Ottawa at this point has $45.5 million, you know, against the cap for next year already. And you see, I look at that, and that's one of the things you have to say: is that a tradable contract? No, it's not a tradable contract.
That's not a tradable contract, and they better have some people ready to come up in the minors.
Right, and I don't think Ottawa's got much going on. You know, I don't think they've got much in the pipeline because they've been drafting late for the last 3 or 4 years. So, you know, and they haven't been moving their excess for. Moving their excess to pick up extra picks and then, you know, develop having a really strong – they don't have a strong farm system at this point. That's the issue.
Yeah.
So, and the other side of it is one that Wyshynski referenced is David Legmond, $27 million – 27 years old, $4.5 million a year for a perennial third-line centerman.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's – you know, Legmond is you're paying – I mean, you're paying him – you're paying him in Nashville. This is the thing that really doesn't make any sense. That reminds me of the John Madden contract pre-lockout when they paid, when New Jersey paid John Madden $4.5 million to be to check people. But they could afford it. There was no cap, so that makes sense. Now in Nashville, they got no revenue. I guess the salary cap doesn't really matter because they have no revenue, and they're paying a guy $4.5 million a year to be the third to put up third line center numbers. That makes no sense.
No, I agree. It's a good list. I it's pretty educational, and I think that my favorite part of it is actually the top line of the list says all figures from NHLnumbers.com. So even the mainstream media is going after NHL numbers to look for their info.
Great. Those guys are great. So
yeah, the same. I love that the MSM uses the same sources that we do.
you get one person or two people, as we've discussed in the past. You get one or two people who really that's what they want to do.
Yeah.
And which is to track the salary cap. And there were guys I remember when, the guys at HF boards were when the CBA came out, and then there were certain guys at HF boards that just became, obsessed with the cap and how it works and what the numbers are and how, and, once you set up the spreadsheets, right? Once you set up the system, maintaining it is the easy part.
Well, just like podcasting, the more you talk about hockey, the more informed you can stay about hockey.
Exactly.
The last thing I got kind of on my list was Tim Thomas. Great in the All-Star game. Played the final period, got the win. Second year in a row he got the win, if I remember correctly. And that's what they were saying. And I was thinking that Marty Turco got the win last year, but I guess I'm wrong on that. But Tim Thomas checked Jason Blake, who's skating in on the net, leapt out, totally took him by surprise.
Uh-huh.
A goalie checking the puck carrier. That's the definition of an unconventional save.
Went all Hashioki on him, for Christ's sake. That was great. that's a kind of play that Hasek would have done. Of course, Hasek would have just stepped out into his way and then flopped on the ice and tried to knock the net off the moorings and everything else, and then scream at the referee for not calling for calling a diving penalty. But yeah, it was very unconventional. You've got a link up on jerseys and Hockey Love, and it was very cool. And Jason Blake was just not happy.
Oh, no.
About that. I'm like, dude.
The only ever time. Like,
he is in his crease. He's allowed to check you. You have the puck.
Oh, yeah.
It's not interference.
The only other time I ever saw a goaltender check a player, I saw live at a Hartford Wolfpack game, and the guy did get called for interference, which I thought was a little ticky-tack. I thought it was a pretty good check, but still. To me, this brings up two issues, two things to me. Number one is that, Francois Chiguerre, GM of the Colorado Avalanche, sign this guy next season. Use the Sakic money if he's not coming back and sign Tim Thomas.
Sign Tim Thomas and buy out Ryan Smith.
Exactly. And the other thing is that poor Jason Blake, I mean, you have to think that on the team where Brian Burke comes in and says, we don't have enough toughness and we don't have enough tough guys on there. Dude, you got checked by a goalie.
You got checked by a goalie. How weak are you?
And you're on the Edmonton Oilers or the Edmonton Journal list for $4 million until 2011, 2012. Dear Jason Blake, that is a tradable dollar figure. and that's also a buyoutable figure.
He's like 37. Well, in Toronto, everybody's buyoutable. They could sign four guys. They could sign five guys to the league max to cap max. You know, for 10 years and buy them all out, and they'd still have money left over.
That's true, and you know it is Toronto, and I wouldn't be surprised with Burke being in charge next year if it turns into the if the offseason turns into this year's Tampa Bay Lightning with the player go round. But yeah, Jason Blake, we will see you. On the waiver wire, dude. You got checked by a goalie.
You got checked by a goalie, and then had the nerve to complain about it, like. Just go back to the bench.
Yeah.
Go hide in shame.
I'm telling you, if I were a ref out there, I would have just looked at him and said, dude, you got checked by a goalie.
I've been laughing. Go make the walk of shame. Yeah. Go, coach.
Yeah. 2 minutes for looking like a punk. Come on.
2 minutes for being a pussy. All right. Pretty go on.
Cool. Well, Tom, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Oh, no problem, James. Anytime. You know that.
As important as the All-Star Game is to the NHL, so is its coverage. And I wanted to talk to Steve Lepore from Puck the Media and get his take on how Versus covered the game. Well, Steve Lepore from Puck the Media, thank you for joining me. I really appreciate it. I wanted to kind of get your take on the All-Star Game coverage this week, the big focus, the big showcasing of the sport of hockey, and since, of course, you're in America, I assume that you were watching, and from what I read on your blog, Puck the Media, that you were watching the Versus coverage.
Yeah, I caught some of the CBC stuff in clips, too, but mostly just the Versus coverage.
I wasn't a huge fan of last year's coverage by Versus. I especially remember the pain that was the obstacle relay course. And the fact that they couldn't actually keep up with the action while they were filming it seemed like they didn't even run a test run of that. How was it this year?
The only place where they ran into that problem really was during the Young Stars game, where they were showing replays of goals while another goal was being scored. But no one really was that interested in the Young Stars game, so it's not that big a problem. Most of the second period of the Young Stars game, they had Pat LaFontaine on with them, and that was interesting because Pat LaFontaine, as you know, is no mere mortal. And Pat LaFontaine, can we get him on TV? He's just a great guy.
Yeah.
I don't know. He might have too much time saving the world from evil, but he's just a great guy. And then they had Messier on in the third period, and, you know.
Well, he can talk forever pretty much.
He can cry if he wants to.
Well, you know, that's a...
Oh, he talked about the leadership award.
Oh, that's right.
He had a great comment in the live blog, will Matt Sundin reclaim his title?
Well, I don't... Yeah, and somehow I don't think it's going to happen.
Mark Messier leadership.
I think that you actually have to show up for the season to actually be able to win an award, but yeah, this leaders, is the new NHL. Who knows?
Leaders don't hold out for half the season.
I guess that's kind of par for the course in a way for Versus. One of my complaints has always been about their highlights their during a game, after a game on Versus. They tend to talk longer than the highlight is, into the next highlight, and never have time to actually talk about what's going on. I don't know, what was the Young Stars game? Did it just seem like Versus themselves were blowing it off, or was it just kind of unprepared for what was going on?
It seemed genuinely unprepared. If you wanted it to seem like they were just blowing it off, they would have just shown shots of LaFontaine or Messier in the booth talking to Emmerich and Engwall. But this was just bad direction in some cases, of keeping replay shots on for way too long, keeping shots going for way too long. And, you know, just it seems like, you know, someone who had never shot hockey before was shooting the game, or the skills competition in general.
Kind of hearkening back to the original, the first game of Versus, which I remember it was the Flyers, but I can't remember who they were playing on the very first game on Versus.
Rangers.
It was the Rangers, that's
Rangers,
right.
Flyers, yeah.
Oh, how awful that first game looked. And you'd think that they would learn by now, considering this is this is they've done enough of these themselves. This should be, you know, this should be the highlight, the showcase. And why does the showcase from the NHL look so bad and get treated so poorly on television?
Yeah, it's pretty unbelievable. Versus does an okay job with covering the game sometimes, but it's just, you know, the complaint is it's not enough.
Mm-hmm.
And just Versus not doing enough.
Yeah.
But overall, the production of the game was not terrible.
Now, the other Versus, of course, they can use anything that they want on their own station to promote their own stuff. And from what I understand, Matt Eiselman seemed to actually be calling the show he was on so much.
Matt Eisman, just, can we get rid of him, please? I am so tired of Matt Eisman. The show is not funny. The clips they, the little taped interviews they had with him throughout the weekend weren't funny. Mm-hmm. He's essentially promoting a clip show. They were essentially doing this All-Star show to show their favorite clips throughout the first half of the season. Why are you spending so much time promoting a freaking clip show? Do you see the Simpsons go nuts whenever Bart and Homer are in the hospital and they remember all their greatest moments? it was really just pathetic, and they need to get rid of that show. It's just not very funny. Versus seems very anti doing the whole Sports Center type show.
Mm-hmm.
They really don't want to do that, but. If you want people to take you seriously, Sports Soup is not the way for it to happen.
Right.
At least go after someone high profile, like you went with Dennis Miller. At least
mm-hmm.
you went after a name, someone people are willing to watch, try to be funny and figure it out.
And it was,
they're giving, what is it, two nights a week to this clown, and it's just not that fun.
Plus repeats. Not it that, seems like they're they're kind of barraging us with it. Versus, didn't you mention that it was the third ranked in the standings, or in the standings, third most watched sports network in America?
Yeah, it is, actually. They went up, their year-to-year primetime ratings went up 23%, which is more than any other sports network. Geez, I got to pull that post up.
I threw a curveball at you there. Sorry.
Oh, here we go. Versus averages 278,000 viewers in primetime every night, which ESPN averages 2.1 million viewers,
mm-hmm.
and ESPN2 averages 641,000 viewers.
Wow.
That's sort of what the next highest competitor is, Speed Channel at 273,000. And you go down NFL Network, Golf Channel, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, all that.
Yeah, kind of surprising the ESPN Classic is as low on that list as it is.
It's the lowest. Well, there's nothing really on it anymore.
No, true. I really miss Cheap Seats. And if you want to do a funny show about sports, Cheap Seats.
Cheap Seats and Arliss reruns.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's about all that was on there. But I still love the Cheap Seats, the Boston Terrier not winning Westminster. And the tennis ball rolling through his legs is classic, beautiful stuff.
Those guys are doing something for during the Super Bowl for some website.
Well, we're back to speculating. We're back to the NHL on NBC finally. But the speculation right now is that the NHL is going to kind of, as it was mentioned, the free lunch being over. and the NHL trying to charge for their product again, which as the ratings have actually gone up for the NHL on NBC and the NHL in general, the question now becomes, well, will NBC want to bite if the NHL tries to charge money for their product?
Well, the whole point about this is the NHL discovering, hey, we found something that someone will watch. Let's try and make more money off of it. Mm-hmm. And they probably looked around and said, hey, we're giving NBC this game for free. And let's make someone pay for it, because it's arguably our showcase event. 4.4 million viewers. That's higher than at least half of the games of the Stanley Cup Finals crew.
Right.
And obviously the highest rated hockey game in the regular season in 30 years. So basically, that's what the whole thing is about. If the Winter Classic had flopped, NHL, oh, we'll do this revenue sharing thing. This works great for us. But they figured out something that they can call their own, an event that people are willing to pay to see. And they're going to try and get a network to pay for it. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that the networks want are the finals and this outdoor game at right. this point. No one wants to cover the NHL regular season. And unless you get the perfect matchups, they don't really want to air the playoff games that much. It's really just the outdoor game and the Stanley Cup Finals that the NHL wants a yearly revenue stream for.
Mm-hmm. Well, that seems pretty reasonable. The question is, of course, whether or not NBC would bite at something like that. And then speculation starts to turn to, well, would the NHL go back to Fox?
And see, frankly, I don't know. I don't know if NBC. I think NBC wants the NHL as a way to promote Olympic coverage. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but I think they see it as, hey, we get this for free and we promote the Olympic coverage. I don't think they want to spend. They don't really want to spend that much money on sports rights. It's been this way ever since NBC had that great exodus in the late 90s, where baseball went off, football mm-hmm. went off, and basketball went off. They do not want to pay that much for, and even though they paid for the Sunday night football game, they are not that interested in doing broadcast rights fees if it doesn't make a lot of sense for them. And I don't, does $20 million a year for a league that's drawn maybe a million viewers a week on Sunday afternoons, when you're probably not getting that much ad revenue, they claim that they're making a profit off of it, but the profit's not more than $5 million. So if you're paying $10, $20 million up front, obviously it stands to reason you're not going to make any money off of it.
That's true. So, of course, you and I looking at it, we have some sort of sense about the thing, which it doesn't seem that NBC has any sense these days, considering they want to put Leno into a primetime slot 5 nights a week. I don't know who's running them these days.
NBC's a failing network. That's the thing. A lot of people, even the... There's even been some crazy speculation that NBC won't be around within 5 years.
Wow.
So that GE is going to get bought out and they're just going to shut it down, that it loses too much money.
Yeah.
But look at NBC. They don't have any hit shows.
No,
I mean,
they don't.
Sunday Night Football is their highest rated show. And that goes away in a few days. They don't really have that much to hang their heads on. So... are they going to have the money to pay for hockey? I don't think they do.
I think honestly. You're right. My only question with the NHL, if the NHL went back to Fox, which wouldn't be necessarily an awful thing, can the NHL disassociate the NHL on Fox from Glow Pucks? It's the only thing that anybody ever asked me about televised hockey. What didn't
and
they
the
have
robots.
The blow? I'm sorry?
Don't forget the robots.
Oh, the robots were fun, but the glow puck is the only thing that people seem to ever remember about it.
Fox, I'm not convinced Fox wants to pay for hockey. I don't know where Ken Campbell's sources are,
mm-hmm.
but it's a pretty poorly kept secret, as I put on the blog, that Fox isn't interested in doing business with Gary Bettman after what happened in 1999, when basically ESPN paid $600 million a year so they could buy time for NHL broadcasts on ABC and keep all the games on ESPN under their umbrella. Mm-hmm. When what Fox wanted to do was either bid on the network portion of the games or the cable portion of the games and put it on FX, which then was a smaller channel, or put it on FX and FSN, which at that point were smaller channels, and they were trying to compete with ESPN. But what And what ABC did was they said, no, we're not going to do that. We're just going to pay $600 million up front. You're not going to know what the split is between the cable and the network. And that's what Fox wanted. The NHL ignored the threat, and they took ABC's money, and Fox was not happy about that.
Yeah.
And it turned out that ESPN paid all $600 million. ABC didn't pay a dime for hockey at all.
Yeah. No, that's the media empire that ESPN and ABC have become. That's just
ESPN. ESPN's really the only place that can afford big sports rights at this point, as the BCS negotiations kind of showed us.
Mm, that's true. So just kind of want to wrap up here with something that came up today. Comcast Sports is going to provide NHL on demand highlights and the like to NHL Network subscribers. I dissed the NHL Network at first when it first came to America after looking at their schedule, but I got to admit that I'm a conversion now. I love it. But is it really that big of a deal if it's only for NHL Network subscribers, people who already get NHL highlights?
Yeah, it's definitely not that big a deal if you already have the network. What they should do is keep it as an on-demand service to preview the NHL Network to get more people interested in subscribing.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to happen by the end of the year is that all these cable companies are going to get a stake in the NHL Network to put them on regular tiers. So anyone who is subscribed to the NHL Network is kind of wasting their money at this point.
Right. Right. Now I understand.
Like with Baseball Channel. The Baseball Channel is owned partially by all the cable networks. That's why there were 50 million homes when they started off in their launch.
That's a good point. I hadn't thought of it that way. No. And of course, Comcast has its own official stake in the NHL with team ownership. So they're going to do what they can to put the product out there without actually putting enough money into it to make it really soar. So
this is the point. They'll do anything to promote the NHL as long as they don't have to spend money on it.
Yeah, that's. Well, and apparently neither will NBC these days. So, well, Steve Lepore from Fuck the Media, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, anytime, James. I enjoy doing it.
Thanks a lot for listening to The Rink. My special thanks go to Steve Lepore from Puck the Media. You can find his blog at puckthemedia.wordpress.com. You can find my blog at jerseysandhockeylove.com. And you can find Tom's work at nhl.fanhouse.com. The Rink is located at www.rinkpodcast.com, where you can also find links to just about everything we talk to, subscribe to the podcast in iTunes, or sign up for our Twitter feed. And you can always email us at rink@rinkpodcast.com or call us at 845-704-RINK. That's 845-704-7465. Thanks for listening to The Rink.